Hello, and welcome to the Subverse News Podcast. Today we are going to be talking about a range of topics, starting with developments in Hong Kong, protests in Russia, GitHub restricting overseas web developers, NASA potentially partnering with SpaceX for a moon mission, Google settling to pay in an ageism suit, YouTubers forming a union for collective bargaining. Before we get into today's topics, make sure you follow us on Minds at subverse.minds.com, where you can find our articles, exclusive content, and our distributed newsroom. Also, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Medium. Links are in the podcast description.
For the eighth week straight, protesters in Hong Kong gathered over the weekend in response to last week's attacks by white-shirted men. The demonstrators faced off with police and were eventually dispersed by rubber bullets and tear gas from Yuen Long, the area where the alleged triads attacked departing protesters, passengers, and journalists. At the height of the demonstration, the crowd swelled to tens of thousands, many hurling bricks and other projectiles at riot police. Unlike the demonstrations from weeks earlier, this one was not sanctioned by the authorities because police said they feared violent clashes between protesters and residents. Despite the banning of the assembly, the protesters showed up in huge numbers and began removing fences from roads and vandalizing police vehicles while carrying umbrellas, long iron poles, and shields. As the confrontations became more chaotic Saturday evening, police fired rubber bullets and tear gas, leaving 23 people injured and two in serious condition. Police also arrested 11 people. On Sunday, another gathering was organized at a park in Hong Kong's Central Business District. Protesters blocked major streets and split off in several directions. Protester Edward N.G. told Al Jazeera, "The police usually surround us and we have nowhere to go, so we adjust our strategy this time. This is much more fluid and flexible." At some point, an elderly woman was filmed getting in between protesters and police, yelling for them to leave. She was escorted away from police by protesters while screaming for them not to fire bullets at young people. A large group of demonstrators headed towards the liaison office of the Central People's Government in the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, but were stopped by hundreds of riot police heavily fortified with water-filled plastic barricades. A clear plastic shield had been erected around the Chinese national emblem above its front doors. Everyone knows very well that the current Hong Kong government has been controlled by some outside forces, like those in the liaison office, an activist surnamed Chan told Al Jazeera. "Now Hong Kong doesn't even have basic freedom of assembly. We have come here to make a symbolic expression." For the first time since its establishment in 1997, the State Council's Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office held a press briefing regarding the demonstrations in the city. "No civilization or society under the rule of law would ever allow acts of violence to take place. We call on the general public of Hong Kong to be aware of the grave nature of the current situation," Yang Guang, Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office spokesman, said, calling on Hong Kong citizens to condemn protester violence. "Hong Kong is China's Hong Kong. Hong Kong's affairs are China's domestic affairs," he added. Hong Kong has been governed under a one-country, two-systems model since the city transferred from British to Chinese rule in 1997. Yang also used the event as an opportunity to restate China's support for Chief Executive Carrie Lam and the city's police force. According to The Guardian, Chinese state-run newspaper The People's Daily commented on the situation in Hong Kong. "Facing these circumstances, the Hong Kong government and police should not have hesitation or any psychological burden. Do what needs to be done." The article called on the police to punish lawbreakers regardless of whether they hold up the banner of freedom and democracy or wear the cap of civil disobedience. The AFP quoted an editorial in another Chinese state-run newspaper, China Daily, that blamed foreign countries for interfering. "What is happening in Hong Kong is no longer the airing of real or imagined grievances. It is of the same hue as the color revolutions that were instigated in the Middle East and North Africa. Local anti-government elements colluding with external forces to topple governments utilizing modern communication technology to spread rumors, distrust, and fear." In a front-page article in the overseas edition of The People's Daily on Monday, the paper also criticized the Civil Human Rights Front, a group in Hong Kong that has organized mass marches against the extradition bill. China, will never allow any foreign forces to collaborate with the internal forces, endanger Hong Kong's development, and trample on one country, two systems, the article said.
On Saturday, July 27th, protesters in Moscow clashed in the streets with riot police, resulting in the arrests of 1,373 people, according to the political monitoring group OVD Info. The police crackdown came after supporters of opposition party candidates rallied for the candidates to be unbarred from running for Moscow City Council. Police used cudgels on protesters near central Moscow's mayor's office, which led to reports of broken bones and open head wounds. Demonstrators were not only met by riot police in the street, but also by fully armed soldiers who helped carry out the mass arrests. Before the demonstrations began, the police and other authorities closed streets and metro stations near the city hall, telling protesters to disperse. The intensity of police response continued, with several videos of police beatings posted across social media. Some plainclothes officers were also reported caught up in the violence, claiming to have been stricken by police officers with truncheons, according to Russian media reports. Protesters were detained before the protests even began, with close to 200 individuals taken into custody by 2 p.m. Protesters face a 30,000 ruble fine, around $475, as well as 5 days in jail for taking in part in an unsanctioned protest. The protests were called for by anti-Kremlin critic and opposition leader Alexei Navalny, which is in direct response to the election authorities in Moscow blocking 30 opposition candidates from appearing on the ballot. While protesters showed up in a force on Saturday, the election authorities state that these specific opposition candidates did not garner the necessary 5,000 signatures needed to be included on the ballot. This comes following protests organized last week, where close to 20,000 participants attended, but reports from the Associated Press say that this week the numbers were near 8,000. Andrei Kolesnikov, an analyst for the Moscow Center of Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, rejects this claim, suggesting, "The authorities have chosen to solve their problems by rejecting even the illusion of free elections and preventing opposition candidates from participating. The cruelty and violation of constitutional rights is also being used as a means of intimidating not only the opposition, but the pro-Kremlin majority." While the call to action was prompted by opposition leader Alexei Navalny, he could not attend in person after being arrested last week in response for calling for the Saturday protests. Navalny was sentenced to 30 days in jail, but was hospitalized on Sunday due to a severe allergic reaction. While supporters cite potential foul play, his associates did not immediately blame the often unhygienic conditions in Russian jail cells. While his associates do not feel as though foul play was involved, one of Navalny's doctors wrote that it was not an allergic reaction, but potentially exposure to a toxic substance, stating, "We cannot exclude toxic damage to the skin by chemicals induced by a third person." Police took approximately 10 of Navalny's supporters into custody on Saturday evening, who gathered outside of the hospital in support of the opposition leader.
GitHub, a U.S.-based software development company and the world's largest host of open-source code, began blocking its services in countries where the U.S. has placed sanctions. This news was first reported last week when Anatoly Kashkin, a Russian developer based in Crimea, found out his account had been restricted due to U.S. trade controls and spoke with ZDNet. Many like Kashkin, who has been using GitHub since 2012, hosting their websites on GitHub, were told their accounts had been restricted. GitHub is also imposing restrictions on Iran. Hamid Saidi is a developer based in Iran who claims GitHub locked his account without prior warning and thinks he's developing nuclear weapons. The countries and territories affected by the U.S. government sanctions are Crimea, Cuba, Iran, North Korea, and Syria. A post on GitHub's website states, quote, "Under our terms of service, users may only access and use GitHub.com in compliance with applicable law, including U.S. export control and sanction laws. Users are responsible for ensuring that the content they develop and share on GitHub.com complies with the U.S. export control laws, including the EAR and the U.S. International Traffic in Arms Regulations," unquote. GitHub offers their users an appeal form to dispute the restrictions. However, according to Kashkin, quote, "It is just pointless. My account is flagged as restricted and, in order to unflag it, I have to provide a proof that I don't live in Crimea. I am, in fact, a Russian citizen with Crimean registration. I am physically in Crimea, and I am living in Crimea my entire life," unquote. GitHub stated on their post regarding U.S. trade controls that U.S. sanctions apply to its online hosting service GitHub.com, but its paid-for on-premise software aimed at enterprise users may be an option for users in those circumstances. In addition, they claim to be discussing with U.S. regulators about how to rectify the situation. GitHub CEO Nat Friedman shared his thoughts on having to follow the U.S. trade law in a tweet saying, quote, "It is painful for me to hear how trade restrictions have hurt people. We have gone to great lengths to do no more than what is required by the law, but of course people are still affected. GitHub is subject to U.S. trade law just like any company that does business in the U.S. To comply with U.S. sanctions, we unfortunately had to implement new restrictions on private repos and paid accounts in Iran, Syria, and Crimea. Many consider using a virtual private network, or VPN, to work around the sanctions. However, GitHub stated that people in U.S. sanctioned countries are prohibited from using IP proxies, VPNs, or other methods to disguise their location when accessing GitHub services. So far, there have been no reports on Chinese developers being cut off from accessing their GitHub account. However, some believe this may change in the near future." SpaceX founder Elon Musk talked to Time's Jeffrey Kluger, which aired on Sunday morning on CBS. Their conversation bounced from subject to subject, but they talked in depth about the future plans of SpaceX. Elon claimed his company was ready to go to the moon within 2 years, adding that he expects his company to be able to send crews to Mars in 4 years. His claims caught the eye of NASA, which is hoping to put astronauts back on the moon by 2024. But in order to accomplish this feat, they may turn to SpaceX to help reach their goal. NASA's Artemis program is a spaceflight aiming to land the first woman and the next man on the moon by 2024. This would be the first step towards a long-term goal to build a sustainable presence on the moon, laying the foundation for private companies to build lunar economy, then eventually send humans to Mars. NASA wants to send supplies up to the moon to build a base and begin mining for ice from the hundreds of million tons, turn it into oxygen, and then use it to power rockets to send to Mars. NASA will use the government-funded Space Launch System, SLS, rocket to aid their mission, but launches don't begin until 2021. A report published in October of 2018 by NASA's Office of Inspector General looked into the cause of 2.5 years' worth of delays and $12.2 billion overrun costs developing their SLS, which is intended to be the most powerful rocket in history. Vice President Mike Pence announced back in March that President Trump would direct the space agency to send astronauts back to the moon. Pence explained the schedule for completing the SLS must be accelerated, and there are potentially an opening to use rockets built by a commercial space flight company, saying, quote, "We are not committed to any one contractor. If our current contractors can't meet this objective, we'll find ones that will. And if commercial rockets are the only way to get American astronauts to the moon in the next 5 years, then commercial rockets it will be," end quote. NASA's chief financial officer, Jeff DeWitt, was asked by Business Insider about Musk's statement regarding sending Americans back to the moon. He thinks the odds of SpaceX pulling off a private lunar landing with Starship before NASA can reach the moon are slim, but he underscores the possibility of a NASA-SpaceX partnership for the moon mission. Quote, "More power to him. I hope he does it. And if he can do it, we'll partner with him, and we'll get there faster. This isn't about us doing it. It's about America doing it. And he's got an American company. I'd love to partner with him and get that done," unquote. DeWitt also claimed NASA would love to bring along any commercial companies like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, or Jeff Bezos' Blue Moon in the Artemis program that would help the agency achieve its goals.
Google has settled a lawsuit claiming that the company discriminates based on age in its hiring practices. Google paid a total of $11 million to more than 200 job seekers who were over 40 years old at the time of application. The main plaintiff in the case, Robert Heath, who was 60 years old at the time of filing, claimed he had highly pertinent qualifications and experience, and a Google recruiter even deemed him a great candidate. The lawsuit said that in 2013, the median age of Google employees was 29, but the typical computer programmer in the U.S. is over 40. On February 8, 2011, Mr. Heath received a technical phone interview from a Google engineer, which was behind schedule. In the filing, Heath claimed the interviewer was not fluent in English, insisted on using speakerphone even when Heath requested that he use the handset so he could hear better, interrupted him before the end of his answers to questions, and would not accept a shared Google document in order to receive the code he requested, instead making Heath read out the lines of code. After Heath failed to get the job, he contacted a Google HR representative who told him the interviewer had acted inappropriately and that the interviewer should have used the Google Docs software to receive the program that he asked Mr. Heath to write. As part of a larger class action lawsuit, another plaintiff, Cheryl Felicas, who was in her 50s, joined the case in 2016. A recruiter requested that Felicas submit an updated resume that showed her graduation dates for college and graduate degrees. When Felicas asked why this was required, she says the recruiter responded that it was so the interviewers can see how old you are. Daniel Lowe, a lawyer for the plaintiff, said in an email to Bloomberg, "We believe that proceeding collectively will help us set a strong precedent preventing discrimination against older workers, which has become a substantial issue, especially in the tech industry." A survey of U.S. startups conducted by venture capital firm First Round Capital found that 37% said age is the strongest investor bias against founders, while 28% cited gender and 26% cited race, with 89% of the survey respondents saying they agree that older people face discrimination in the tech industry. There have been more reports popping up in the news about older people having trouble finding work in their fields. USA Today wrote about a 59-year-old, Pete Dennis, who roamed across several states attempting to find a job after working at Hitachi. A 66-year-old woman wrote on Wired about what it was like to be hired at Google when she was 52 years old. For older workers and others who aren't quite a culture fit, tone-deaf get-togethers can cause emotional and logistical havoc. I've survived karaoke, rock climbing, and a folkloric overnight ski trip myself. There are good reasons for groups to let off steam and get better acquainted, but please, managers, make sure everyone feels comfortable about socializing in whatever way and at whatever time that you think will be so much fun. CNBC found a Quora question asking, "I'm 35 years old. Am I too old to join Google, Facebook, Microsoft, or Apple as a software engineer?" In response, a Google employee, Andrew Shibano, who said he started at the company at 46 and has been working there for 7 years, said it is possible to get hired while older, but there are obstacles, including the interview process aimed toward young college graduates. Although ageism is rare, you may feel out of place at times, since most of your coworkers will be much younger than you are, he wrote. This comes up more often in social situations than in technical ones.
Content creators on YouTube have recently joined forces with a community-based union that they claim will combat the unfair business practices and arbitrary standards set forth by YouTube. The venture, known as FairTube, will join forces with IG Metal, Europe's largest trade union, demanding YouTube to address the concerns of content creators. The collective of content creators have also created a plan of action for how they will address individual concerns. The decision to create a YouTube union comes in response to the fairly laissez-faire approach and disjointedness imposed on each individual content creator while on YouTube. The movement is to create collective bargaining in an attempt to counter changes on the video's platform that impacts their ability to make money. Examples of this claim is that YouTube has changed standards for copyright multiple times without consulting or informing content creators, resulting in takedowns and demonetization of videos. Other examples include the demonetization of what FairTube considers innocuous content with no opportunity for recourse, or demonetization during key times where content creators receive most of their views. Jorg Sprav, a YouTuber made popular from his slingshot videos, recently talked to Motherboard, addressing the lack of transparency. "We aren't demanding things that cut into profits or are unrealistic. We want fairness, we want transparency, we want to be treated like real partners, and we want personal communication instead of anonymous communication." FairTube's campaign website outlines a list of their proposals, which utilizes Europe's broad privacy laws as well as Germany's labor laws to force YouTube to come to the negotiation table. FairTube's list of proposals include 1. Publish all categories and decision criteria that affect monetization and view of videos. 2. give clear explanation for individual decisions. For example, if a video is demonetized, which part of the video violated which criteria in the advertiser-friendly content guidelines. 3. Give YouTubers a human contact person who is qualified and authorized to explain decisions that have negative consequences for YouTubers and fix them if they are mistaken. 4. Let YouTubers contest decisions that have negative consequences. 5. Create an independent mediation board for resolving disputes. 6. Formal participation of YouTubers in important decisions, for example, through a YouTuber advisory board. IG Metal believes that YouTube will concede to these basic demands by utilizing Europe's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, what is known as a data controller and a data subject. A data controller being a company or organization that makes determinations, while the data subject being a person whose data is being processed, collected, or controlled. IG Metal's project secretary, Michael Six Silberman, outlined how YouTube has an obligation to share data about data subjects, saying, "The right to be informed if a controller is storing personal data about you and what they are doing with it. The right to receive a copy of all the data they have about you. The right to receive a copy of all the data they have about you. The right to have data corrected or forgotten." IG Metal hopes that the GDPR can be the framework for revealing arbitrary demonetization or takedowns of videos, which can help content creators curate content that can clearly follow the YouTube content guidelines. Thanks for listening. If you want to find more content, head over to subverse.minds.com to find articles, videos, and join our public newsroom, where you can discuss topics and ideas as well as share articles. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Medium, where we regularly post our content and receive feedback from our valued listeners, like you. Our videos and articles can now be found in podcast form on Spotify, the Apple Store, Stitcher, and Anchor. If you'd like to support our work, you can donate to our PayPal, Patreon, or Subscribestar. You can also get Subverse gear at our Teespring shop. All the links are in the description. Stay tuned for more content every weekday, and we'll see you next time.